Blog Talk Radio.
Rah. Killer Mike Bamboo. You already know. Yeah. No surprise, I'm from a gangbang culture, but we can keep it civil or pull a thang-thang on ya. Southern California where the sun don't quit, intergenerational gang so sons don't quit. But immediately you see that the problems that's in my city are secondary to what's propelling it in my city. I mean really break it down, take poor black and brown, educate them poor, take the jobs from out of town. Then inundate them with the date of drugs and dumb TV, locked into a zoo and hunted daily by the police. Then you get a group of youth who know they don't belong, then they gather up and organize a number up strong. But see, the failure isn't seeing that the problem ain't the gang, it's the situation in the communities where we hang. So I'm so pro-gang, it might scare a motherfucker, cause I fixed the misconception that the enemies are brothers.
Bang on the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, upset the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, homie, we been set up.
I tell them, I went from a street gang thing, then I joined a military fleet marine force thing. From a little bitty gang in the south of Los Angeles to dragging bodies out of their house to help a government who hell bent on keeping money spent on the missile. The reality's the difference between them shits is little. We had the objective of arming up over money, and they had the objective of arming up over money. And we told kids join us, we the truth. Lies about protecting our black to get recruits. Then we found out we getting killed for the hood, and we don't own a single speck of dirt on that hood. Whether in a zone down south in Decatur, or in a flatlands off of Lenox and La Brea, or in a low-rise project in Chicago, big money come in and buy up our body.
So your sets up, we about to upset the setup.
We about to upset the setup.
To upset the setup.
Throw your sets up, we about to upset the setup.
Upset the setup.
To upset the setup.
I do it for the Crips and the Blooders. BGF brothers, the real Freeway Ricky Ross and Chris Dutters. I do my thing for Hoover, I represent for Fort. So my folk and my people, so they set to support. Support me to Matthew, she might say the shot. So maybe next summer, no mama's gotta cry. Cause maybe next summer, nobody gotta die. Hell, even if we fail, somebody gotta try. The only way the system rule is somebody gotta lie. And the lie they told is old, they base it on your race. They separate you black, you brown, you yellow, and white face. Then we further separate by joining gangs and legislate. That our neighborhoods are now at war like we are separate states. So the police occupy our hood to keep down all the drama. So the Starbucks they just built is comfortable for soccer mama. And American Apparel comfortable for all the hipsters. And it's zero tolerance for all you spicks and you niggas and you chinks and you crackers. And it ain't about who's whiter and it ain't about who's blacker. But the money is a factor, and the factor is the factories got moved up out the hood. When starvation is present and absent is a job, a man will simply starve or he will form a mob. If you should form a mafia, then you should think Sicilian. Buy the hood for real, every block, every building, every build,
every build.
Feed the chill,
feed the chill.
Gang bang,
gang bang.
Build,
build.
Feed the chill,
feed the chill.
Feed the chill,
feed the chill.
Gang bang,
gang bang.
On the system,
on the system.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
You
you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that. Get him where it hurts.
Starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Free line. Revolutionary greeting. Welcome to another edition of Jordan Universal Radio. I'm your host, Boomani Shakira, where I go as a fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transform the criminal mentality to new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African communities. Our fifth goal is to prepare new African prisoners for release, produce new African recidivism. Our overall goal is to transform the whole prison Dutch slave complex with the prison system into the big interest learned through educational means and come on to the streets and organize institutions and programs that are benefit the people need. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I'd like to go over some events that happened in history during this week. On April 23rd, 1856, Granville T. Woods was born. He was an inventor of more than 20 patented industrial appliances. In 1956, U.S. Supreme Court refused to review lower court decision that banned segregation and interstate bus travel. In 1963, during the One Man Civil Rights March to Jackson, Mississippi, William L. Moore was found dead on a U.S. highway, U.S. Highway 11 near Alitalia, Alabama. From 1968, from the 23rd to 24th, and Columbia University operation virtually ended for the year by a new African and white student who seized five buildings on campus. April 24, 1867, new African demonstrators staged riot-ins on Richmond, Virginia streetcars. Troops were mobilized to restore order. 1877, federal troops were drawn from Louisiana, marking the end of Reconstruction. 1888, Ezekiel Israel Smith, North Carolina minister and educator, named minister to Liberia. Also in 1886, Augustus Tolton ordained a Roman Catholic priest in Rome and assigned to America. 1955, non-aligned movement of Africans and Asian nations were formed. On April 25th, 1918, Elvis Fitzgerald, renowned singer, was born. In 1945, United Nations founded a San Francisco meeting attended by new African consultants, most notably W.E. Du Bois, Mary McLeod Bethune, Ralph J. Bunche, and Walter White. 1959, Mark Packer was lynched in Poplarville, Mississippi. In 1960, cassette judgment in Memphis, federal court ended restrictions, barred new African voters in Fayette County, Tennessee. This was the first voting rights case under the Civil Rights Act. In 2002, Lisa Lopez from TLC died at age of 30 in a car crash near Jupiapa, Honduras. 1818, on date of April 26, James P. Beckwith, a cowboy, explorer, and pioneer, was born. 1892, Sarah Boone's ironing board was patented. In 1948, former chairman of the Black Art Organizing Committee and former political prisoner, Martin Musa, was born. In 1960, new African protesters holding nonviolent wait-in at the segregated Biloxi Beach in Mississippi are attacked by white people with stick, club, pipes, and whips. In 1968, students seized administration building, Ohio State. In 1984, William Count Basie, jazz immortal and orchestra leader, died in Hollywood, Florida, age of 77. In 1994, Nelson Mandela became the first president of Zania in South Africa. April 27, 1899, Mr. Daniel lynched in Georgia for talking too much about the recent lynching of another new African man. 1903, U.S. Supreme Court upheld clauses in Alabama Constitution that disenfranchised new Africans. In 1903, Maggie L. Walker, named president of the Richmond, St. Louis Bank and Trust Company, and became the first U.S. African woman to head a bank. In 1927, Coretta Scott King, Sierra Atta, was born. In 1961, Sierra Leone gained its independence in Africa. In 1972, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah passed in exile at the age of 62. April 28, 1911, Pearl Bassett, born in Marion County, she's a lifetime community activist spanning over nine decades. In 1941, the Supreme Court ruled a railroad Jim Crow case brought by Congressman Arthur Mitchell that separate fertility must be substantially equal. In 1957, W. Robert Means, Chicago lawyer, elected chairman of the American Veteran Committee, became the first African to head a major national veterans organization. In 1967, Muhammad Ali, heavyweight boxing champion, stripped the title for refusing induction into armed forces for religious beliefs. In 1968, Samuel L. Garvey Jr., the first new African admiral in the Navy. Year 2000, Albert Neil Washington, former political new African political prisoner, former Black Panther Party, former Black Liberation Army member, dies of cancer in prison. Okay. 2021, after increasing resistance to discussion by America's racial history, Idaho became the first state to ban the teaching of the critical race theory in public schools. On April 29, 1899, Duke Ellington, composer and musician, was born. 1967, Ms. Robert W. Claytor elected president of the YWCA, the first new African president of the organization. 1968, 1930, the Poor People March began. Ralph Abernathy, Southern Christian Leadership Conference president, leading delegation of leaders representing poor white, new African Indians and Hispanics to Capitol Hill for conference with cabinet members and congressional leaders. In 1981, Buffalo, New York, grand jury indicted Private Joseph G. Christopher of the U.S. Army on murder charges stemming from the racially motivated slaying of three new Africans in September 1992, an all-white jury acquits the officer who violently beat Rodney King, a young new African man in Los Angeles, for an uprising in which more than 50 people died and over 2,000 were injured. Also during that time, in 1966, on that day, Rhodesia police killed seven terrorists near Sinona. You know, those events that happened in history during this week. No more, but it was just some, right? Which actually was a lot. You know, thank everybody who joined our broadcast in 2014. I thank everybody currently building themselves, respecting their community area, educating themselves. I thank everybody you know, who's been supporting them, things who've been positive in their movement. You know, and if you want to know about Georgia University, you can type it to GJU. Go to www.georgiauniversity.gdu.com for more information, or you can email at georgiauniversity71@gmail.com, or you find on our social media page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, for name Georgia University. You know, tonight in the show, we're going to be talking with Brother Chris Norris, who's doing a lot of different things in the community, who's an educator, organizer, so forth and so on. I'm about to open the brother line so he can introduce himself. We start this interview. Peace, brother. How you doing?
Hey, peace, King. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing well, King. I'm doing well. How about yourself, man?
Man, I cannot complain. You know, getting it in every
True
day.
True indeed, man. First of all, thank you for coming to our broadcast. I show you now you want to wish the understanding. Thank you for what you did in the past, the present, what you can do in the future, right? You know, introduce these people to yourself. Introduce yourself to the people. They're going to know who you are. And so we know what kind of dialogue we're about to get into. Let them know a little about yourself, who you are, you know.
Okay. All right. Again, man, my name is Brother Chris Norris. I am from Thompson, Georgia, man. A small town near Augusta, Georgia. I'm actually in the profession of actually doing professional mental health counseling, substance abuse counseling. I'm involved in a variety of different organizations, man. I'm heavily involved with the Prince Hall Affiliated Masonic Organization for the state of Georgia, where I'm the assistant state director for our youth mentoring program, our youth empowerment program. I'm also a member of Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated, been a member and working with the Association for the Studies of Classical African Civilization. for, you know, probably about the last 10 years in some capacity. Definitely got to get even more involved here in the southern region. Also, in addition to that, I've been practicing Pan-Africanism. I am the nephew of Yao Yambu, who was a great friend of Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael. And so, you know, we've just been building, man, really to go in and educate and liberate our people, you know, by any means necessary through knowledge and self-training, so, and exploration and education.
Okay. That's a lot there, brother, you know. Again, I appreciate that, you know. Tell a little bit about some of the organization. Tell us a little bit about your work as a licensed professional counselor and certified addiction counselor. You know, what are some of the things you do in regards to that work?
So in regards to the professional counseling component, man, of course, it's centered in mental health, you know. However, what I did was that I actually, you know, being a Pan-African, man, my emphasis has always been on liberating our people, man, from the psychological chains of slavery, you know, and taking the African-centered approach, you know, and following along the lines of, you know, the great Bobby E. Wright, the great Wade Nobles, you know, those that came before us, man, who have been Ashley, Naeem Akbar, you know, to name a few, in reference to providing quality mental health services, man, that are kind of rooted and steeped in helping our people deal with oppression, suppression, repression, helping them understand the traumatic experiences, man, that we are having to fight through a brawl, you know, that were, you know, systematically placed on us, you know, and how we understand how to operate, man, within this system or within these worlds, you know, and still be able to keep our sanity. So that's kind of like what I do. And through the substance abuse or through the addiction, let me not just say substance abuse, through the addiction part, you know, it kind of operates the same way. You know, we go in and kind of treat it, you know, and understanding that we can be addicted to anything. So in my therapeutic approaches, that's kind of what it is. You know, it's kind of like getting people to understand that a lot of our addictions are based off of the values, you know, that are not naturally our values as an African people, you know, and what we've done is that we've disconnected. And so the purpose is to kind of reconnect you to that which you've been disconnected from, and to kind of help you regain your sanity and your baseline, you know, in order for you to continue to be able to move forward. So, you know, whatever it is that I do is kind of always geared from an African-centered perspective, in reference to, you know, like I said, liberation of yourself, you know, from the psychological chains of slavery.
True indeed. You know, I have a question in regards to that.
Okay.
From your very own experiences and your information and data you don't gather from all your cases and individuals, right? Does the system of, you want to term, American psychology, which is the white psychology and white social science, does it work for African people? Does it work for people of African descent? Does it work for them? Or does our people need an African-centered psychology or liberation psychology to get a better understanding of who we are, especially when it comes to the DMS manual? What are your thoughts on that?
Hey, good question, indeed. So, no, I, you know, that is one of my core principles, is that you cannot take a European approach to solving the African problem. And whatever it is you get through, you know, that process is only going to be done to go in and promote, you know, the values that are going to keep those that have power in power. You know, Dr. John Henry Clark, you know, and I didn't mention that in the open, but, you know, we created the John Henry Clark Historical Society and Study Club, you know, that kind of builds off of a lot of those principles and those teachings, you know, but Bobby Clark teaches us, man, that no person in power is normally going to go in and relinquish their power. So, we get, you know, that this DSM-5 and its correlation or in its invention, you know, as we began to go in and have this false illusion of progress, we saw that it was necessary for them to still go in and have means to segregate. And one of those ways that we know that they did that was by creating this diagnostic and statistical manual. You know, it was created specifically to go in and make sure that even though you're integrated on paper, you know, we're still going to be able to segregate you while still being able to go in and infuse, you know, our values and our morals into what it is that we think is going on. We need some type of justification for why, you know, why would you leave the plantation if I've been feeding you and taking care of you, right? What would be the reason for me justifying black people needing to go in and Africans needing to go in and be like, this ain't normal, you know? And so we got that this whole thing was kind of created. At least that's the perspective that I take. You know, these diagnoses are kind of stem from us being able to go in and try to be as white as we can be when we want to be. You know, and that's the goal of it. So, you know, I definitely don't, you know, I've said that publicly and openly. I'm like, you know, it's not a something that is set up for us by us, but it's something that is set up, you know, to use us in order for us to go in and further divide, you know, who we are in reference to coming together collectively as a people. So.
True indeed. You know, I actually sentiment that myself as well, you know. We know that a lot of sources of our problems and issues stem from our very own mind, the way we think, right? So we must go through a re-Africanization process to be in our real African mind, not just be in the African mind from the respect of having an African name, but actually be in the Pacific mind state, so we understand and solve our own solution through our own issues that relate to us from the African perspective, right?
Correct.
And we know that people like Freud and Jung and Allen and Skinner and Sapir and so forth and so on, right, they're only speaking from the perspective of a European. And basically, you know what I'm saying, when they look at a lot of these social sciences, they're basically devoid of our African spirituality and our African intelligence, because they're not really studying intelligence, they're studying the mind state. They're not studying the intelligence per se, they're studying behavior. So they're devoid of anything that pertains to us anyway in general. Yeah, a lot of those particular diagnoses come from the condition that they don't experience the young people growing up in regards to a lot of different things that they add from the Greek mythology and the Oedipus complex, Lecter complex, so forth and so on, that had nothing to do with us. Not even the story of the histories, right? You know, so there's a lot of bias into it. Just like the same thing with Nostradamus prophecies. All their prophecies was about European people. It wasn't about nobody else, you know, so... I think you got some prophecy that basically the bias and racist, you know. Why is there prophecy at one area? So I just look at things like that from their perspective. It doesn't make sense to me. You know, it doesn't make sense for the people that have put you in oppression and servitude and suppression to actually give any kind of mental solutions or a key to solving your own problem by the system they created. Even the American academics are the extension of that.
Correct. Not going to happen. You're absolutely correct, you know, and I think that Bobby Richardson King, he spoke about that. Even when we mentioned fraud, right, and I always go in and I, you know, tell people, I say, you know, it's the difference between fraud and frauds, you know, and what we have to do is look at the fraudulent, you know, slip of it in reference to it. But, you know, it was sort of like even hearing the story about Socrates, you know, and when you hear what happened to him, you know, it was the fact that Socrates and tried to go back and teach what he didn't understand, because what we understand is that those Greeks were sending their brightest mind. They never engaged them in war. What they did is they sent their brightest mind over to Africa to study at the feet of the Africans, you know, and then when they would learn, they would come back, and then they would try to go in and teach what they learned. You know, so Socrates in the story, of course, end up having to go in and kill himself because he didn't understand the concept, you know, of monotheism in reference to how we practice it in Africa. So we saw a lot of that, you know, and you're absolutely correct, you know, and it kind of just goes back to what we were saying. No person in their power is normally going to go in and relinquish their power. Like, there's no way you're going to go in and give me the tools in order for me to walk away from you so that you can go in and have to do what it is that I've been doing for you. You're not going to do it.
True indeed. You know, very fascinating when you think about it, man, you know, in retrospect.
Oh, yeah.
In regards to, like, you know, Dr. Colby Cambone basically turned African psychology. You look at African psychology is based on liberation school. It's a liberation ideology in regards to the aspect of regaining your African identity so you can be able to liberate yourself as an African person, you know, from a psychological perspective of things. Like you said, breaking the psychological chains of slavery that Nnamdi Atwa talks about, you know, that we put on our heads. You know, even though the 13th Amendment was put out there, the body of physical slavery still had a clause to say that you can go to prison, you're still put back in slavery, right? And then you think of the American academic system, in American legal system, they're on the extension of this same, quote-unquote, slavery that occurred during the 14th, 15th, 1600s, and 1300s, you know, the same slavery, right, that occurred, you know. Hey, the same as that thing, man. You know, it doesn't make any sense, but there's people that looking from their own perspective of things. I'm not trying to gain any kind of understanding or even challenge what they're learning here, you know.
Yeah, and you're absolutely correct, and that's what we find out. You know, it's so necessary. So when you mentioned, you know, Baba Cambone, you know, I've been doing a lot of research and reading Dr. Fukuyao, you know, who has self-healing power and therapy and Kandenzi, the Bantu cosmology system, you know, and these things are how we're able to go in, and that's the part, you know, Brother Bomani, that we struggle with is because, you know, us being in the profession, you know, that's kind of like governing a group, man, and trying to have the group understand that we're like, you can't come in here in this space and expect that what it is that we've got through this graduate program is really going to go in and do anything except for benefit those people that the so-called created it. I'm like, you got to go in and find me one of those, you know, I'm like, other than, you know, this is a old wrinkled-ass white man profession. You know, this and that's the reality of what it is that we do, you know, and we're like, you know, we know, you know what I'm saying, that we begin to start looking at, you know, the different isms, you know, we look at the fact that they needed to go in and make sure, and everything is about sustaining the status quo, sustaining power and control, sustaining a way to go in and try to justify, you know, us having a maroon state of mind. That maroon state of mind is a dangerous mind to have when you start talking about, you know, rising up, fighting back, liberating yourself, you know, give me justice or give me death, you know, and you trying to feel like, hold on a second, wait, where is this coming from? So we need to be able to justify in a system that we created, right, in a world that we created when I think, I don't know if it was Gil Scott-Heron or if it was it might have been Pop, you know, that was talking about the mirror of the ghetto and why it's such a dangerous thing because, you know, when our people are out here talking about their struggles, it holds a mirror up to a world that European imperialism has created. You know, you've got to see that you've created this here. It ain't something that we just went in and volunteered to have. You know, you created this through your greed and through your culture and through your way of being and through your way of thinking.
True indeed.
You know, there's no balance, there's no harmony, there's no peace. You know, there's no order it's order out of chaos for you, but you got to go in and maintain the chaos in order for you to stay in order. So, you know, I'm with you 110% on that, comrade. I'm definitely with you 110% on that. So.
True indeed. Tell us about your organization, GRAZE, Graduation Awareness and Society Group, right?
Right. So tell
us about the organization.
So GRAZE is actually, it's kind of like a two-fold. So I always tell people that, you know, it's going to stand for what you want it to stand for. You know, in our space, it's gradually raising African youth in society, gradually raising the awareness of Africans in your society. It's gradually raising the awareness of youth and society, you know, but that A is the most important thing because it's from an African-centered perspective, right? Everything it is that the organization was created, and it was actually created, the name came from the Homestead Grays. We was talking about the fact that
the baseball team,
correct. You know, we was talking about Josh Gibson, you know, and the power that he exhibited, man, through his ability to be able to hit these home runs and everything else it was that he exhibited. And me and one of my comrades, man, he actually transitioned here about a year and a half ago. you know, and we was there, and that was how we came up. We was like, man, you know, our whole thing is to raise awareness. You know, this is what, you know, George Jackson Radio is doing. It's like it's raising awareness in regards to these things that are going on in the world that you are oblivious to. Like, you don't want to see it because it's painful. And so that's what the system is really, that's what my company, my organization is designed to do. So it does consulting work, whereas we, of course, do different things that we do, but primarily I provide mental health services to those that are, of course, that are not able to go in and afford technical mental health services, man. So, you know, I collaborate and I work with Medicaid to try to make sure that our people get what it is that they need. And then I consult out in the community, man, to go in and do a variety of different rites of passage type program services, working, you know, alongside Department of Juvenile Justice, DFACS. You know, one of my things that I always tell them is that whatever you're going to give is going to be from an African-centered perspective. You know, I'm an African warrior that actually know what it takes in order for me to become, you know, I had to get through this stage, you know, so I specialize in whatever story that I tell is going to be told from an African perspective. I don't use European heroism in order for me to go in and promote change, you know, with a particular demographic that is, you know, looking like us. I just don't, you know, and that's kind of like what I want to be able to do with Grace, you know, but in a broad perspective, we provide mental health services. We provide consulting services. You know, we provide workshops, trainings, you know, along, you know, different lines and different areas, working with social and emotional learning deficits. Of course, you know, working with trauma-related issues as it's related to our people as well. But more so, you know, now it's kind of like really building up with the historical curriculum of being able to go in and make sure that we're teaching our history. So, like, hearing what it is that you talked about in the beginning, man, that was major, because one of the things that Baba Asa Hilliard reminded us is whatever you do, never let them start your history out with slavery. Because if you started out with slavery, then everything it is that you do stands to look like progress.
True indeed.
I got to go back, you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, okay, how did we get here? You know, and that's the conversation. That's what Grace Group does. It goes in and don't allow you or afford you the opportunity to start the conversation at 16, 19. What it does is that it uses the Key Congo concept of time that Dr. Greg Carr talked about, but it, I think Dr. Fukia was the one that spoke about it first. But it talks about that Key Congo time. It's like you're looking at the clock with 12 hours and you realize that every 5 minutes represents 500 years. You know, the 11 represents 500 years, and only one group of people is able to go around that clock, you know. And we still ain't got enough time in order for us to be able to explain our contributions and what it is that we offer. So, you know, being in the psychology field, you know, Dr. Richard King talked about that as well. You know, he talked about the origins of psychology in reference to how our ancestors practiced it. When you're breaking down the eye of Uache the Diache, you know, he went in and broke down the Hittites and the mental aspects of how all of this made up the totality of the whole and how we have been practicing psychology. And then, of course, you know, you don't realize that, but you begin to understand that, hey, these things that you're hearing are not new things. It's just things that they went in and kind of reinvented more so than anything else and tried to make it their own. You know, we know that European imperialism, master plagiarism. They are master plagiarizers. You know, they do that shit better than anybody else. So, you know.
Without a doubt, you already know. That's where they move, man. Teachings, enculturation, decoration. You know, I understand you find an Olin Kyle and Bantu group and Namaste experience, right? How do those two groups relate in regard to your work?
So, of course, Ubuntu group was the idea that I had in reference to kind of practicing some of the core principles of both my art and bringing in some of the core principles of Kwanzaa. You know, especially focusing on Umoja, Ujima, Ujamaa, as far as collective work and responsibility. So Ubuntu, of course, you know, is us talking about working together collectively and understanding that I am, therefore you are, and as long as you are, then therefore I will be. So the idea was to go in and try to create a collective, whereas we bring in mental health agencies that are set up and designed to go in and help liberate our people as best we can by educating them and also by providing them with quality mental health services. So that was the brainchild behind forming an Ubuntu group, where there was supposed to be a collective of different counseling agencies that were Black-owned counseling agencies, that all of us kind of had a particular niche that we did, and we were supposed to bring that together collectively in order for us to go in and become a better service provider to the people in our community. You know, and through that, you know, we're able to go in and create our own tithing system in order for us to start pouring money into systems, pouring money into programs, you know, that are specifically designed to go in and help liberate our people, right? Tying into, you know, freeing the land, you know, and things of that nature, and making sure that the clients that we serve not only receive one particular aspect of just us sitting and having these conversations, but also interacting, you know, with the people in the community to go in and have them talk about self-sustainability, you know, where they don't have to depend on somebody else for their way of living, you know. So it's all about liberation. That's where Ubuntu Group was born out of.
True indeed. You know, no, actuality, we are our own liberators anyway. When it comes down to it, man, we cannot blame the European, cannot blame the system. We blame ourselves for our condition and how we respond to what's going on. It's all on us.
Right.
Yeah, you know. So the Namaste experience, right? What exactly is that? You know, what does it do?
So the Namaste experience is actually a program that I created that blended. So we bought the bonds. We kind of brought this out of Kemet and understanding Kemetic yoga and understanding yoga.
Okay.
And, you know, it's all about the, you know, mindfulness and being able to go in and center ourselves enough to be able to go in and move forward, right? So that's what's the number sign. And what it did is that it blended psychotherapy, per se, or psychoeducational services along with yoga in order for us to really go in and start helping the healing process in reference to adolescents and children, you know. So I kind of created the program to go into the school systems to go in and begin to start helping young people post-COVID, you know, that was dealing with a lot of anxiety and adjustment-related issues because, you know, they had been desocialized, you know, they hadn't been around people, man, and they was actually trying to figure out how to get back in. And, you know, of course, our young people, you know, we take the mindset, that's what it is that you do most, it's what it is that you do best. So even when you're listening and you hear your parents, you know, who, of course, we had a big fear and a big phobia in the Black community. You know, man, it was a struggle for them kids to be able to get back into that school setting, you know, and we understand that, you know, hey, the same people that own the prison system own the school system. So we tried to create something to go in and always, you know, curtail or always interrupt that pipeline, you know, that we have from the cradle to the grave, right? You know, from the cradle to the prison to the grave. We try to, and that's what the Namaste experience was based off of. It was really trying to go in and make sure that our children, you know, wasn't left behind in reference to transitioning back after, you know, this so-called epidemic or this so-called pandemic. But that's what that whole thing was based off of. And it was just centered around yoga. It's centered around different physical exercises that are really designed to go in and help children and help people in general, because it's not just for the kids, but it's for whoever it is that needs it. But that's kind of like what it was set up for, man, is to really go in and help them recenter their mind, you know, and bring it back into focus, man, and to be able to move forward while at the same time, you know, we're gonna always try to make sure that it's about us. So using our stories and our images, man, to join and try to help as many people as possible.
Indeed, that, man, you know, anything that I respect, it'll give us a better understanding of who we are, and also give us a better approach to solve our own problems and issues by being relate to things more, things that relate to us and our concrete condition and reality.
Yes, sir.
I understand you said he was a member of ASCAP, right?
Correct.
People are listening. Explain to them what, tell them what exactly what it is, you know, ASCAP, what the initial stands for, exactly what it is, and who were some of the founding members.
So ASCAP, of course, is the Association for the Studies of African, for Classical African Civilization. ASCAP, I want to say, started in 1984. And you had Sheikh Anta Diop, who was instrumental in kind of spearheading that. Of course, you had Dr. John Henry Clark. I want to say that you had Jacob Carruthers, Baba Asa Hilliard may have been there, Baba Leonard Jeffries, of course, Dr. Yosef Ben Yakinen. And, of course, I think you might have had, let me see who else that may have been there, because I'm trying to pull it off the top of my head now. But they kind of started this, studying classical African civilization. Of course, you know, they all are master historians, or our historians. That's what ASCAP kind of have a 10-core system, 10 principles that we actually go in reference to. You know, all of it is still about liberation. You know, it's about us trying to go in and assuring that, you know, we attach ourselves to example to a master teacher in reference to our learning process. So, you know, in reference to us becoming what it is that we are becoming, you know, it was one of the journeys that I had to go on in the field of counseling psychology. You know, I had to attach myself to a African, you know, black psychologist and therapist, you know, to actually teach me about how it is that we're supposed to go in and continue to go in and do the lead work, you know. So we have a different conference. We have different regions. Right now, I think I'm not sure if it's Dr. Valithia Watkins. I don't have it in front of me, but here in the southern region, we have Dr. Reba Kelsey, who's actually the president of the southern region. We work with Dr. Burnett Gallman, who's out of Columbia, South Carolina, as well as him and Dr. Derrick Jackson, two of the, some of the more notable names that we have in the southern region. We have Dr. Greg Carr, who, of course, is one of the master teachers, that has really been working and was working close with Dr. Clark, of course. You know, he did his thesis and everything else on Dr. Clark. Dr. Mario Beatty, who is, I think, maybe the president of ASCAP right now, who's also, I think, the chairperson of the Africana Studies Department, I think, at Howard. I think him and Dr. Carey at Howard University, you know. And, of course, Dr. Jeffries is still involved. So it's a plethora of people, man, that we have that have been out here fighting this battle for a long time. It's not even enough that I can go in and speak on, because even like I say, I'm still a baby in the game in reference to ASCAP. And I'm just really trying to find my way through it. But I've been, you know, in some capacity, this is kind of what spearheads our approach, or my approach in particular, to what it is that I do, you know. But Baba Mariba Kelsey, who's one of the elders, of course, as well, man. So it's some heavy hitters in there, man, from a historical perspective, you know, teaching language with Dr. Mario Beatty. You know, that's one of the things that we're loving best when you talk about the school system, you know, that we actually study the metanetter, which they, of course, you know, call the hieroglyphs. But, you know, we understand that the correct name of it is the metanetter. And he actually reminds us that we need no interpreters, man, as an African people. You know, in other words, I don't need anybody to go in and tell me when they left the inscriptions on the wall in order for us to go in and decipher and decode it. You know, you're reconnected to that. So that's what the whole thing is about, language and things of that nature, being able to make sure that we don't forget, you know, from whence it is that we came and how it is that we got to where that we are and what we still must do and where we still must go. You know, like Dr. Clark, one-on-one, you know, history is the clock that people use to tell their culture and their political time of day. And all history is the current event. So that's what ASCAP kind of, you know, is predicated off of, is that I think it was kind of born out of Dr. Diop, actually, Dr. Jote, actually going in and dismantling, you know, them in reference to the who were the first people on the planet, you know. And then, of course, you know, Dr. Clark came in and, you know, dismantled Mary Lefkowitz and his famous video that he did in reference to when they was having the debate, you know, where he reminded that, you know, I debate my equals, all others I teach, you know. And he began to go in and spank this white lady and remind her, you know, that you're still a child in this game. And, you know, and that's kind of like what ASCAP builds off of, you know, so.
True indeed. True indeed. You know, how significant is us learning our story when it comes to dealing with psychotherapy or dealing with mental health?
All right, say that again, brother.
I said, how important is it of us learning our story when it comes to relationship to psychotherapy or mental health?
Man, it's everything. You know, and that's the part that we're, you know, really trying to emphasize. I always tell, you know, we have the art of storytelling that I actually probably use more than anything else in my form of therapy. You know, even if they talk about CBT, it's going to be African-centered. You know, if we're talking about cognitive behavior therapy, it's going to be from an African-centered perspective. It doesn't matter what it is, we're going to go in and make sure that we make it about us, for us. And, you know, history, you know, is extremely important, man, to, you know, you being able to regain some sense of balance. From a psychological perspective, as a psychotherapist, you know, we use a lot of stories and examples in order to go in and make sense out of something, right? So when you hear that, for example, you know, we hear, you hear that I'm a Prince Hall Freemason. Right. So one of the things is that it's a beautiful system of morality. They're the allegory illustrated in signs and symbols. Where that concept in and of itself is what I just reconnected back to Dr. Mario Beda and what he's teaching in regards to the meta-netta that they call the hieroglyphs. Right? You know, it is these things that we have, and what we have to do is that in the form of psychotherapists reminding our people that, you know, this is meticulously been done, and there's a lot of layers to this as to how it even got to this point, you know. So it's not unusual, you know, for us to go in and have some of the issues that we're having, you know, and we're trying to go in as best we can to get you to understand, you know, how it operates and that this has systematically been done. So we really got to have some conversations. You know, what's natural and then what's not, what's unnatural. So, you know, I think that it all loops together, you know, in reference to us being able to explain or really be able to go in, you know. My approach in particular is what I tell them is that I don't give advice. As a therapist, I don't offer advice. What I offer is options. And what that does is that it teaches, you know, us about ownership. And that's really what we have to look at. You know, like, is this a choice that I'm making, you know? And if I got options, you know, I got to think about whatever choice I made and what way that choice is going to be beneficial and advantageous to us as a people. You know, my behaviors not only impact me, but they also impact those that are around me, you know, especially those that are, you know, our brothers and sisters as well.
True indeed. You know, I understand that you're a founding member of the John Henry Clark Historical Society, right?
Yes, sir.
How did this actually come about? How did it only come about? And what are some of the purposes of it?
All right, so the John Henry Clark Historical Society came about myself and a brother by the name of Nikhil McDonald. Him and I met at the Wanzika Jung Fu event that was in Augusta, Georgia. He, myself, and this brother named Brother Ron Muhammad from the NOI. So we all kind of were in Augusta, but we had heard of each other, but we hadn't met each other. So Brother Nakir and I formed a friendship. We had a before school rites of passage program that we was doing at a local center, you know, that was African center, you know, with myself, Brother McKee, and Brother Rome. We used to call it 5 a.m. Rites of passage program that we had, where we was going all over the city of Augusta, man, and picking up young black boys, bringing them to the location, man, and teaching them about the art and science of manhood. So Brother Nikhil introduced me to John Henry Clark. Once he introduced me to John Henry Clark, you know, I began to actually start studying he and Dr. Ben, and, you know, we would sit down and just have sparring sessions, you know, and we began to start building a relationship with Dr. Goldman. And we, through Dr. Goldman, we was able to go in and meet Sister Catherine Adams, Dr. Catherine Adams, who was a professor at Claflin University. We had some people from Payne College up in Augusta, Georgia. And then we, Dr. Adams and Dr. Goldman introduced us to Dr. Carr. And so Brother McKeel was like, look, man, Brother Chris, we got to start this, you know, a history club here. We have to start a study club, a study group here in Augusta, Georgia, you know, and we're going to actually name it in honor of, you know, Baba John Henry Clark. And so Brother McDonald, Brother McKeel actually went to New York, if I'm not mistaken. And I got to go back in. I got a little older now, about to hit that half a century mark. And he actually went and got the blessings from Baba Clark's wife in order for us to start that history club. And so, of course, what we wanted to do was to go in and actually focus on the teachings of John Henry Clark and his lectures, and then that would open us up, you know, of course, to the rest of the historical figures, and actually being able to reconnect us to our African ancestry and our African past, and being able to utilize that, you know, in the context of freeing our people. Like you say, man, you know, free the people, free the land. So that was really what it was about, was trying to liberate our people by teaching them about who they are through this, you know, whole experience of knowledge itself.
Okay. Okay. But what actually is significant of Dr. John Henry Clark?
What's significant? So, of course, Dr. Clark, you know, he was, and so we know that he was a self-taught historian. You know, he talked about the colored YMCA. We talked about his struggle. We talked about, you know, looking back at Dr. Clark. And I was just telling him that we're going to be in Columbus in June, you know, and that my whole thing was to make sure that we go in to visit where Dr. Clark was born at, in addition to everything else. But Dr. Clark is probably the most recognized master teacher that we have in and of African history, right, and culture in reference to the teaching. So he's the one that he and I would say that he and Dr. Ben probably are the two most recognizable and noted of all. But Dr. Clark, of course, universally is accepted as one of the true master teachers and historians that has actually gave us, you know, connected those dots, man, into our past and understanding, you know, that our history didn't start in 1619. He's been able to go in and lay out a framework, you know, that has proven to be able to, you know, help in reference to educating our children, educating the young adults, and also making sure that we keep the elders and the, you know, the older adults engaged, you know. So that was kind of it, man. Dr. Clark, just, you know, him, his name in and of itself, man, resonates on every platform. No matter if we are, you know, no matter if we're operating in a system, you know, whereas we're dealing with lecturers per se who actually go in and actually teach history, right? So, or we have those that are out here that are doing it, you know. So whether it's the armed revolutionaries or whether it's the mental revolutionaries, like Dr. Clark was able to go in and socially be accepted on every platform. You know, he talked about his relationship with Brother Malcolm, you know, being involved with, you talked about Kwame Nkrumah, you talked about Patrice Lumumba. You know, Dr. Clark was building relationships with those men. You know, he was involved there. You know, he talked about going to Ghana, you know, where he saw Kwame Nkrumah and what, you know, Brother Nkrumah told him in reference to him being here, you know. So he connected a lot of the dots, man, in regards to us embracing our African selves, you know, in the true fashion and being unapologetically about it. You know, that is where my concept of bang on the system really came from. I heard Dead Prez talking about it, but, you know, Dr. Clark, I think, you know, sums up what it means to go in and be like, I'm not going to conform to your rules nor your norms just in order for you to go in and accept what it is, you know, or in order for me to go in and have sustainability. You know, he just really spoke his mind, spoke facts, you know, wasn't dealing with beliefs. It was just like, these are what the facts are. It's up to you to go in and try to prove me wrong.
True indeed, true indeed. You know, yeah, Dr. Clark is one of my favorite. You know, that's our new African population edition named Dr. John Clark time, because that was where we at right here. You know,
yes sir.
Dr. John Clark time, man. You know, we're trying to build as big as much as possible, man.
I told you when I get there, I was like, you know, that was, you know, sooner you took me where you was at, you know, that was the first thing that we connected on. I was like, man, that's Bob Clark's hometown. That's where he's from. I'm like, ain't no way I'm not going to be there. Yes, sir.
No doubt, man. You know, you got a long sonic history as well, right? You know, besides that, you know, you married, you got three children, right? So you represent the man, woman, and child aspect of things as well, right? The unity spread come from the committee spread, right? Okay. You know, you say in your spare time, you enjoy reading, debating, discussion, and teaching about African history and issues related to the African community, right? Okay. That's interesting. Why is it necessary to do that?
I think that one of the things is that if we don't begin to have, if you command a presence and when you have an opportunity, you open your mouth and you don't say anything, you know, then that's on you. So it was necessary for me to go in and present present as unapologetically African. You know, even now, man, when people see me, that's the one thing that they say more than anything else is that, look, man, that Joker there loves some Africa. He's going to do everything he can to go in and make sure that we understand the African origins of civilizations and its contributions to the world. You know, he's going to look at it. He's going to make sure that our young people know from where they came. He's going to make sure that you know from where you came. You know, he's going to engage in meaningful dialogue to kind of help connect the dots on our contributions to the civilization, you know. And that to me, man, became the most important thing. As a father, it was necessary that I taught my son, you know, what it would be like in order to try to navigate these torrential waters in this world. And that, you know, you need to understand that you're going to have to be able to make sure that you take care of yourself. And you're going to have to go in to make sure that part of you taking care of yourself is that if we're going to be in a system that is designed to, you know, really try to shape and mold you into something else, you're going to have to know who you are. If you don't know who you are, you'll become whoever it is that society needs you to be. And what we know through history is that society needs for us to always be the pawn. We need to be the sacrificial lamb in order for them to go in and have what they have. So I wanted to make sure that whenever what is being taught, I always say, I tell whoever it is that I'm, when they come back and ask me information, they tell me that they learned this, that, or the third. The first question that I ask them is that you should always ask them, okay, where were we at when all this was going on? In other words, where was the melanated universe at when you're telling me about, but where were we at? What were we doing? You know, what they're going to do is they're going to pull that information, because what they're not going to want to do is make sure that you know that really this is the person that took the credit for it, but actually we were the ones that actually went in and did it. You know, it's undeniable. You know, when you hear me talk about Bobby Richard M. King, that's like part of, you know, understanding the Kim theory, the black dot theory that Dr. Richard M. King talked about. I think in his book, I think we was talking about biological, psychiatric, and warfare. I think that he may have mentioned it in there as well, but I know he mentioned it on one of the documentaries, man, that I've seen, when he went in and broke down that every person that has been born of this world, in this world, all started out as a black dot. And he was making people understand why Kemet was called Kemet. You know, it is that space right there. You know, like, do not forget that Egypt is in Africa. And before Egypt was named Egypt, it was named Kemet, and it was land of the perfect black. You know, and Dr. Clark, so all this stuff ties in, man, in reference to it. And when you're explaining people and you're trying to get them to tap into their greatness, you know, you use examples in history prior to 1619. You know,
so
you look at that part of, you look at the story of Mansa Musa being one of the, you know, the richest man ever, and you talk about how he dressed, you know, his horses in gold. And because of how wealthy he was, whenever he would hit a community, he would cause the community to be in chaos because it would go in and cause economic problems. Like, this, you know, it's undeniable. You know, to talk about Tyreek, it's undeniable to go in and talk about him. It's undeniable. And I'm looking at you like, you know, this is in your DNA. So who told you, like Brother Malcolm said, to wear that mask and self-hate and self-doubt? You know, and that's why we're debating. I'm like, you know, you can't. I'm like, y'all can't come at me any kind of way. You know, I'm like, I'm not going to reduce myself to infidel servitude mentally, nor am I going to do it physically, spiritually, or emotionally. Like, y'all can't do it. So it's important that, you know, we do have, you know, debates, because we need to be able to spar in order for us to go in and make sure that we're producing, you know. Dr. Zeebo, Dawood Zeebo, in one of the ASCAT conference said, and this is like one of my things that I live by in regards to Graves Group, you know, in reference to also Prince Hall, in reference to Cap, it doesn't matter what part it is, but I always tell them what Dr. Dawood Zeebo said. He said, you know, to go in and say that we agree to be disagreeable is just totally asinine. He said as a people, we have to agree to be disagreeable while we're struggling for the truth. So we're supposed to be having discussion, right? Everybody wants liberation for us as an African people. So we can agree to be disagreeable, but where the research comes in at is that what we're struggling for the truth. Oh, Brother Bomani found this. Oh, Brother Chris found this. You know, oh, Brother Nikhil found this. Oh, Brother such and such found this. You know, we're going to come back together, and we're going to bring all of this information, because what we're trying to do is move us together collectively as a people, man. We're trying to liberate all of us, you know, from tyranny and oppression. We're trying to go in and free ourselves, sure. You know. So that's what that whole movement is about, that, you know. That's why I'm like, I love to go in and have debates, you know. But I remind myself, unless the words of Dr. Clark, those who mind equal, I debate. All others, I teach. So, you know. It's a few of us, you know, that only have a space where we can go in and really have some in-depth conversations, man, that are not super shallow and super, you know, they're just real shallow, because people can't go beyond 1965 and, you know, or 1963 in the March on Washington. You know, you can't, I'm like, you can't start a conversation with me about that.
You have to work up.
All throughout, even before 1619, you got to go and look at what's taking place, because we understand that European imperialism is a global system of oppression. It's a system that simultaneously was going on. You know, when Dr. Clark was teaching us that the World War One was not fought for what they telling you it was fought for, but Dr. Clark is telling us what, man, World War One was fought to see who was going to control the spoils of Africa. So when you look at the continent, what you see is that all of these European nations were fighting to go in and see what part of Africa they was going to control.
No doubt. Y'all already know.
That's been going on and on and on. You know, that's what he talked about in reference to, you know, the formulation of, you know, when the Moors in Spain, you know. And those are the things, those are hard pills to swallow sometimes, but when you go in and say, well, yeah, we got the Romans off of your back, you know, but we replaced them on your back, and in some cases, even though we look like you, we treated you worse than they did, you know? So you have throughout history where you're able to go in and see that this ain't a system that just started. Whether we're talking about the Council of Nicaea, you know, in Byzantine, or we keep going, you know, you just keep going back in this clock, and you start seeing where even Alexander the Great, you know, during 332 BCE got pissed off. Why? Because he came to Africa looking for the king-making ceremony. And then they refused to give him the king-making ceremony. Because they refused to give him the king-making ceremony, this joker went in and burnt up. He went in and just destroyed it. He came there because the king-making ceremony gave him, you know, gave you power over the people.
Yep.
You know, because you know, them hotels were responsible for putting, you know, Zoser to sleep, per se, in the designing of the pyramids of Saqqara. But, you know, when you had the sun rising, and then you had them wake up, and when everybody in the village woke up, and they woke up and they saw that this brother who was dead yesterday is running around the village in full speed and vigor and sweating, like, man, he came back from the dead. That concept and that story. Like, shit, we can't make it up. And that's why, you know, that's the drive that I have, is going in and making sure that they get the story right. Unlike the names have been changed, but the stories remain the same, but the story started out with us first, you know. And so they had to change it because it's a situation that anytime they tell a story, when you find out that the story that they're telling is about you, then that disempowers them. So what we got to do is re-empower our people as much as possible, man, by educating them through who they are and from whence they came.
Yes, sir. You know, I got another question for you. I'm opening the line for callers, right?
Okay.
In regard to your Masonic work, you know, so you're a part of the Shrine, the Eastern Star, the Knights of Pythagoras, the Philatelic Society. You know, other organizations, right? How does this work ties into the liberation of African people?
So every component of it, and that was, you know, one of the reasons why, you know, when I talk about Brother McKeel, and I probably owe that brother there, man, the most, man. I need to make sure, too, that y'all link up with McKeel McDonald. Now, he's part of the Black Farmers Association as well. His wife is a midwife of the Walla, man. You know, she's from the islands as well. She's from Africa. Son is a blues phenomenon who actually came through our Knights of Pythagoras program as well, man. Hey, Mac McDonald, man, bad boy. I just had to plug him real quick.
Okay.
So that was one of the things that, you know, when I talk about this part of these particular organizations, that's why Brother Nakir and I were so close. You know, I couldn't go into this world of Prince Hall and the different components of it and not be able to go in and understand how it relates and how it ties into the African origin of things. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we understand that when we are talking about Islam, you're talking about, for example, you're talking about the Shrine. You know, you're talking about a system that you're talking about in specific with, you know, dealing with, you know, concerning the Moors. It made sense to me because I'm like, okay, I can relate it and tie it into the African origins of it. When I look at the systems or the ceremony practices, you know, I'm looking at it from an African perspective. You know, everything it is that I'm looking at in regards to these organizations with their Prince Hall Freemasonry, you know, I understand that Africa is at the base of it, you know, even for the Knights of Pythagoras, you know, and reference to the name, we have a concept that we use in reference to Pythagoras. You know, we have this thing that we call Eureka, which is an exclamation for our founding. And so I would always go in and say, okay, if you ask, if I tell you that I found something, my natural first question as an African is, who gave you the problem to go and look for it? So when Pythagoras was trying to go in and find out what the area of the pyramid, you know, that a squared plus b squared equals c squared, that 3 squared plus 4 squared equals 5 squared, you know, and when he finally found out how to do it, well, what we've got to remember is that Pythagoras had been over here studying at the feet of the African. he had been over there in Africa where they had been teaching him. Because we understand that all of your bases that you have, math, science, language arts, and social studies, is not one of them that you can't go in and find that actually originated on the continent. Whether you're talking about the mathematical papyrus, if you're talking about the fact that we've seen calculus, trigonometry, algebra, we've seen all of these equations. I know if you go to APEX, they have Dr. Asa Hilliard, he has a video that I actually had got from him, or DVD that I had got from him, and actually it's going in and showing all this right there in Shango Bone, you know, in reference to women being able to go in and track they cycle, you know, and how it was, you know, whether it was Charles Spence talking about, you know, the first calendars and that it took 24,000, 25,000 years in order for them to be able to track, you know, the stars and how that made, you know, this is all us. You know, your first calendar that you had that came about maybe 42, 36 BCE, that's all us. So from a Masonic standpoint, that made sense to me, right? I understood that even though it brought about here, but the practices that we actually build the organization off of are rooted African history. But these stories and these things that we have in reference to the structure of the organization are born out of the continent. And so that's why I'm so, you know, heavily involved in it, because I'm like, this is Africa. It ain't for every, you know, but for me, when I look at it, I'm like, oh, this is Africa. It makes sense to me. It makes sense, you know. You had to be 70, you know, you had to be in school for so long. Dr. Ben teaches us that, right? You had to be in school. You couldn't even teach your first, you couldn't teach until you was like 70 years old. You know, these are your stages that you had to go through before you was able to go in and teach, man. You was in a, you know, an apprentice, or you was in a fellow craft, or you was in, you know, before you became a particular, you know, you had to be at least before you could open your mouth, right? That's the difference between, you know, what we call Isfet, Mama Marimba Ani, you know, and Yorugu. You know, like, man, we've talked a little bit. So, you know, we this is kind of like, yeah, that Prince, that's, we know what Prince Hall said. 1771, he said, what, we're going back to Africa. A lot of people credit that with being Marcus Garvey being the first. But that's another reason why we, you know, love Dr. Clark so much, man. You know, Dr. Clark was the one that was like, you know, nah, Prince Hall had the first Back to Africa movement was actually organized back in 1771 by Prince Hall. You know, I know the abolitionist, man, who also happened to go in and be a preacher. You know, that was also worded. But his father and I think his family was from Barbados. You know, his father, I think, married a white woman, you know, and, you know, he was a prince there, you know, and so forth and so on, as the story has it, you know. But the reality of it is that I tell him, despite the story, this joker said, we can go back home. Prince Hall said, we can go back to Africa. You know?
No.
We ain't negotiating. And I think that he understood how, in certain things that we do and certain things that we say, that if you are who you say you are, this is your accountability clause. And so if we become part of this, or we create this that you already been stole from us, because you didn't create it on your own, you know, we're familiar with it because we still tied into the ancestors, and we know that when they got here, they was already had a lot of ritualistic practices that they was already doing.
Yeah.
You know?
The only thing they did was create a modernized masonry with the ancient principles and teaching of our been existing. And quote unquote, that they missed all my knowing the mystery schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, also that Pythagoras studied for 21 years in the temple before he got into understanding anything, you know.
Absolutely.
In regards to that's why they say 21 is a good number. When you become a Mason, that's a good number. 21 is a good number. And go out to coming in large because of Pythagoras.
Yes, sir. He had to, you know, and we got those systems, man. We got those things. You know, you'll see it in a variety of different places, man. You know what I'm saying? I was telling him, I said, you know, I don't go in and hold a lot of conversations. You know, I just go in and just be like, listen, I'm going to talk about Africa. That's what I'm going to talk about. You know, and that was part of that process. You know, we started talking about Martin Delaney, you know, Prince Hall Mace, W.B. Du Bois, Prince Hall Mace. You know, some of your greatest thinkers, Booker T. Washington, that we had that contributed so much, Prince Hall Mason. Henry Highland Garnett, Prince Hall Mason. Let our motto be resistant, resistant, resistant. Right, Prince Hall. So all it, you know, you have these Absalom Jones, Richard Allen, you know, they ain't call it, they said the
Mark Garvey, Mark Garvey, Elijah Muhammad, Prince Hall Mason.
You know, and so we get that part, right? It was so important. You know what I'm saying? Because it was way more to it. What we're doing now, like this is what the organization was built and what it was kind of founded off of. And then what it's done is that, you know, it's went somewhere else. But you have to go back to why it was created in the first place. You know, it was necessary to organize. You know, and those guys understood that. You know, we understand that we have a natural rites of passage, man, that we go through, man. So, yeah, bro, I tell anybody, I'm like, man, that's definitely one of the best decisions that I made, was closing my mouth long enough, man, to hear Brother Nikhil, you know, really educate me to make sure that I understood the African origins of, you know, joining the organization, why it was necessary and why it was okay. Because I had got some misinformation, but when he went in and kind of broke it down, and I was like, man, you know, you've been doing this for the last 3 years, bro, you know, and you don't even realize it, you know, because you're hearing what it is that you want to hear elsewhere, but let me go in and give you this information. And then once we went in, and I was like, shit, I'm good, you know, and it's steady, you know, improving me as well, you know, it's steady making me, you know, even more in tune, man, with the necessities that it's going to take in order for us to go in and liberate our people, so.
Okay. No, I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate you coming onto your platform, man, you know, and sharing out your understanding. At this time, about to open up the lines, if anybody has a question, comment, or statement, please press one, open your line up. Anyone got a question, comment, or statement, please press 1 or open your line up. You know, in the meantime, Prince Hall? You know, so who actually is? You know, you mentioned Prince Hall, Absalom, you mentioned some of these names, right?
Right.
Tell us a little bit about their association with the Free African Society and what the Free African Society was about.
So you probably could actually go in and tell me more about that, right? We know that Absalom Jones, Richard Allen, it was some heavy hitters that they had, but what we do know is that, and I mean, I'm just sitting here now and trying to and recall the Free African Society, but you know, Prince, and I can only speak for it in minimal terms, just to be honest with you.
Okay.
This is probably why I would go in and tell you to reach out to Brother Nikhil, because typically what we do, man, is we usually tag team pretty good, bounce off each other just from that standpoint. You know, I definitely would give him a leg up in reference to some of the level of information that he has in regards to those particular things with the Free African Society, where he's lectured about it and where Dr. Carr, I also think, have lectured about it. Both, I think, you know, I told you that Brother McKee is the Prince Hall Mason as well. So, but we understood that So Richard Allen and Absalom Jones were very instrumental in Philadelphia in reference to organizing, of course. If I'm not mistaken, I think it all kind of, I think it revoked into it as well with AME.
Yes, sir. They organized that. But both of them organized simultaneously with each other, the AME Church and the Free African Society.
Okay, all right. So now I'm trying to go in and recall some of these names from that Free African Society organization. But I know that
I know Absalom Jones was a part. Absalom Jones, Richard Allen, that lot of them were part of it. You know, especially Richard Allen. You know, Richard. Both of them were part of it at that time in regards to, like, the Free African Society was like a society that was geared toward the development of African civilization, development of African culture,
like supplying things like during that time. Mm-hmm. Slavery still going on, you know, during that time. Okay, so if people, for instance, if people run away and get there through the abolition aspect of things, they can supply mutual aid, food, clothing, and shelter, resources, housing, you know what I'm saying, a place to go, you know, education, training, you know, different stuff like this, like a mutual aid system, right? A lot of times the same thing we're doing in our community in regard to defense, educate, eating, policy, and culture, you know what I'm saying? Want to own, control, operate, community we exist in, you know? Want to build schools and institutions and community centers and hospitals and learning centers and, you know, things of that nature, right? They were working on those particular aspects of things. That's what they basically were doing. And I was coming out of Philadelphia, you know, in regard to that sense. Even the aspect of the AME church, like you look at now, a lot of the new African churches now, they still have the mutual aid aspect, especially when they go in the community during the COVID pandemic, pass out toiletries and food. That's the mutual aid respect of certain things, you know, or having history programs or whatever, you know, they have that for the community, community affairs. Well, those are mutual aid programs, right? You know, those are assistant aspects. And that's what the Free African Society was about, you know, but I have a call up and I'm gonna open the line. All right, well, yeah, go ahead and respond to it. Come out.
Okay, so what I was gonna say real quick is what you just stated, right? Is what Prince Hall Freemasonry is. So you as you see, the two are interwoven. So Richard, so Prince Hall was the one that actually accosted Richard Allen and Absalom Jones in reference to starting African Lodge number 459 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, I think in 1791. So we got a charter in 84, then we didn't get there until 1787, allegedly started in 1775 was when Prince Hall actually formed African Lodge number 459. Then Prince Hall went on this journey to in Philadelphia, then he left Philadelphia, I think then he went to New York and started, they started two there. But as you're talking about this, right, this is exactly what it was. It was a way for free blacks to go in and really start understanding how and what they needed to do now that they have this, quote unquote, this freedom, you know, and that they create a system that is designed for that. So when as you're talking about this, Brother Ramon, I'm just like, that's what, you know, this is what we do in the organization. You know, that is what the organization is based off of, what it's always been about, you know, and that was the part that actually drew me to it. So, yeah, you're absolutely correct, man, because I saw that, I'm reading up on it a little bit as well, and I saw that some of the founding members, a quote, that actually started African Lodge 459 originally, that it said maybe about 15, you know, some folks would go and dispute that, but they also were part of the Free African Society over here with Absalom Jones and Richard Allen. So at least about four or five of those guys that was with Prince Hall was also a part of what Richard Allen and Absalom Jones were doing in Philadelphia. So.
True indeed. You know, like you mentioned earlier, Martin Lane and a whole bunch of other individuals. A lot of individuals also talked about in the book Black Square and Compton by Waltz, right? At this time, I'm going to open a line for one of the callers, right? 614-285. The line is open. If you got any question, comment, or statement, please do see the time. 614-285, your line is open. Go ahead.
Greetings.
Greetings.
My name is Kanji. And I'm sitting here listening, and fortunately I was able to listen from the beginning. And you're pushing a lot of familiar buttons, resurrecting some really powerful memories. When I listen to y'all in this particular discussion, I ask myself, because you're talking about most of the folks that were in the above ground. And I wonder, those who were in the underground of these movements, how does, what is the meiotic balance? You've got, we've always got those who we see, but then you always got those you don't see. And it's kind of like the Underground Railroad, where you have the conductors up front driving the train, and then you've got those in the caboose that you don't really hear much about.
No.
But their position is a powerful one, because if something happens up front and the train cannot be maneuvered from the front, it's those in the caboose, in the back, that can back the train up and send it in the opposite direction where they need to go. And Baba Clark was like a dad to me. He would work in both arenas.
Yes, ma'am.
And Queen Mother Moore was the same way. She worked in both arenas, from the front and the back, from the top and the bottom, the seen and the unseen. And there are those of us, had we not had those unseen relationships with people like them, we would not even be here now. When you honor them, it just brings tears to my eyes and reminds me of those different parts in our struggle and those different people and the positions that they took. I would go to hear Dr. Clark speak at some public event and walk up on stage and stand off on his right shoulder, right behind him on his right shoulder, and not say a word. But he knew I was there. And he would say something that let me know he knew I was there, whether he recognized me from an oil that I wear, or there are things about our scholars and historians, like their ability to be a Baba, you know, that doesn't always get told. But I'm just one of the many who never expected him to remember me. I ain't nobody. But he did.
Yes.
But he did. And
yes.
I never spoke a lot. I'm pretty well studied, but I never really spoke a lot because I couldn't prove many of the things, conclusions that I would come to, because they came through the ancestors instead of through a book or a scholarship.
Yes, sir.
And one of the things that he said to me that really made a difference for me, he asked me, he said, "Daughter, you know why I love you?" And I was like, "No, sir, you know, I don't, you know, I don't do anything big or profound." Or, and he said, "Because the same conclusions that I and others like me come to through scholarship and through books and through historic research and study, you come to those same conclusions, but you use spirit to get there. And that was the paternal validation. He was good at that. That he gave to us young sisters. You know, he was a Baba, and he was there for us. And he made us know that there's more than one road to getting to where our people need, and more than one weapon to use in this fight. I didn't really know I was going to say this, but you brought it out of me, and I thank you. I'm 71 years old, and it's important that y'all pull stuff out of us. Well, Monty's heard me mention that before, that if you have to piss me off, the point is to pull it out. There are a lot of us elders who have information inside of us, and y'all got to go get it. Y'all got to bring it out, because we need to be able to win this fight. That's one of my favorite greetings. Tutashinda Ageha, we will win this fight. I thank you for listening to me. And I yield.
Thank you so much.
Okay. I appreciate it.
When she mentioned those things, that was I think Dr. Clark, and I know that Dr. Clark did a, and I want to say it was on the In Class with Carr show where he actually was talking about the ones that wasn't mentioned that was so instrumental, you know, in the liberation fight. But when she stated that, that's some research, Brother Bumani, that we definitely do. I would love for you to get with Mama Connie, man. Let's put some work in, because she's absolutely right. We need to pull it out of, you know, that is the essence of being a Jagna, you know, being a Jagna, and being Jaynop, and understanding, you know, the art of storytelling, and being able to go in and get those stories from mouth to ear. And even like when you hear me talking about Prince Hall Freemasonry, a lot of that is, you know, they gave stories from mouth to ear. It wasn't anything that you necessarily had to always go and put in writing, because to go in and put in writing meant that, you know, it could be something that other people could find. So, you know, we was fit, and of course, you know, that's when she spoke about the spirit, you know, that's us building that fire and sitting there at the feet of the elders and listening. And then we take those same stories and we pass them on to our children and so forth and so on. And it's in the ceremonial practice, you know, that we should be doing that, man. So that, yeah, brother, that's warm my heart there. Appreciate that call there, Mama Khan.
Indeed, you know, I'm listening to what you're saying, right? You know, especially in regard to the symbolism and the craft of Prince Hall Mason, right? You know, in regard to certain things you speak about the 5 points of fellowship, you know, in regards to the Rama Bill story, right? You know, the allegory aspect of it, like, you know, we got hit in the chest. You know, we lost our feelings and emotions. We got hit in the throat. We lost our original language. We got hit in our head. We lost our mind. And therefore, we died mentally, right? So when we look at that particular aspect of things as a symbolic sense in regard to who the individual is and how the brother was raised up and the dead left him living perpendicular and, you know, he had to run through different gates and he tried to get to Ethiopia, he didn't know the path route, trying to go to Ethiopia and, you know, and the ruffians and the tools that they used to destroy him, the same tool to build a temple, to him build with no hands and so forth and so on. Or you look at that allegory, the actual condition as Africans, a new Africans in the empire in America, right? That's our condition. And that's why you gain all the information and knowledge and experience
to get back to her, to regain the identity and purpose of who you actually were, who we actually were at one time, right? Like, right, let's say we're the invisible man. We're not trying to be the invisible man. We're trying to be known and understood.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's it. The highest level, man. I tell them, listen, man, study the continent. Study Africa. You know, and I always tell them that if the name has been changed, the stories remain the same. You know, it became something that drove me, because I was like, okay, where did this story come from? I get, you know what I'm saying, the purpose of it, but what is the African origins of this story? Because this story didn't just start out here. You know, things are, you know, things that we technically use, you know, to grow as men in our stages of development. So even from the psychological standpoint, I oftentimes, when I'm working with young men, I use a three-pronged approach, and I always tell them, you know, it was kind of born out of a conversation that I had. I think I've said the name Akbar, but I was listening to Dead Prez. So Dead Prez is like my group, right? You know, those are my guys that I, you know, probably ride with more than anybody else from a hip-hop perspective. And they had the song, of course, for Animal the Man. And when that song came, you know, and I began to think about how we operate, you know, as beings. You know, and so I oftentimes tell young men that 95% of decisions that you make is from the waist down. You know, you're very impulsive. The tube between your legs drives your insult, you know, because that's your self-esteem that's built off of what it is that you think in regards to that. You know, when you move into the boy stage, in which Naeem talks about, Dr. Naeem Akbar talks about, you know, you want to play games. Him and Jawanza Kadunfu both talked about that. You want to play games. You'll spend more money on your car, you know, but you're still living at home in your mama's basement. But you're out here trying to have 20 women, you know, and you ain't ready to go in and do anything, right? You know, but when you become a man, you know, then what you're going to do is that you're going to understand that I'm going to spend more money on my educational achievements in regards to knowledge itself, and making sure that I'm able to go in and provide for myself and provide for my family. So these stages, man, I'm like, you know, everything that you do for the rest of your life will probably unfold in these three stages. You know, when you do something, hey, who does that, a male, a boy, or a young man? You know, and it's been very effective, man, in regards to some behavior modification stuff that we've done. And I'm like, that's not African. I tell them, you know, that's one of my favorite things. I'm like, hey, you know, that ain't how we govern ourselves. Right now, you know, you out white and white. You do a much better job of being white than the white folks do. So.
True indeed. You know, I have a question for you, right? I know you mentioned earlier about the grades group, right? And
right.
You mentioned the Rites of Passage program. You know, for the people listening, right? Explain to them what exactly is the rites of passage. You know, what exactly is explaining to the people? What exactly is the rites of passage?
So a rites of passage is just simply just really what I just described, the stages of development. And the stages that we go through, whereas you're putting, you know, tools in the toolbox in order for young men and young women, young males and females to grow and matriculate into young boys and girls, and then eventually become young men and young women through the art and science of African manhood and womanhood, utilizing principles that are and values that are the foundations of our development. And that's what the rites of passage does. Like you was talking about earlier, you know, the farming and, you know, preserving the land, the educational component, the historical component, the ability to be able to articulate and to be able to go in and, you know, just different stages that we would actually go through in reference to what you have to technically do is you have to master proficiency before you move to the next stage. So we'll give you a ton of things. We'll give you some things that you have to go in and learn, right? We may go in and assign a chant right, you know, to this. You know, Mama Kanye mentioned Pomoja Tutashende, right, you know, and understanding that together we will win, right, you know. And so one of my rites of passage program that I created was called Why Young Goji Kwaki Show, which translated into Tomorrow Leaders. And what we did was we took these young men, you know, we took these males and we started working with them, specifically giving them tools to put in their toolbox, you know, in order to go in and start developing them into young manhood, you know. And that's what a rites of passage does, man. It actually just takes you through a variety of tests. It's also very important that the ceremonies are done after the achievements. You know, that's extremely important. You know, and a great rites of passage program is going to make sure that we celebrate those achievements at every level. So even when you're looking at a traditional educational system, guess what we say, Brother Bamani? Guess what we tell them? That too is Africa. That too is Africa. Your whole educational system is based off of African principles and concepts. You know, get promoted. So you have to go in and meet proficiency in the previous grade in order for you to get promoted to the next grade.
Conferring a degree.
Conferring other degrees, right? So you have to understand. So what so when I go back, I think about one time when I heard Dr. Ben. And Dr. Ben said something that I always use, and this is how I was able really to go in and separate having, you know, these degrees that I done got from these colleges and universities, right? You know, I have a double master's degree in counseling and psychology. I have a master's education, a master of science in counseling and psychology. I'm a licensed professional counselor, certified as a Vincent counselor. You know, we got all of these things here that we have, you know, bachelor's of science and criminal justice. So I was like, Dr. Ben said something one day when I was listening to one of his videos a while back. He said, you know, we got to remember that the first person that got a degree got it from somebody who didn't have a degree. You know, and that's why this right here became so, you know, I was like, wow, you know, I never thought about that. You know, and then that was how I went in and understood that these degrees that I got in reference to becoming a Freemason was so necessary in my development. And me coming full circle in my rites of passage in reference to African manhood. So these stories, you know, are things that our ancestors were using. And even though the stories may have, you know, the names have changed, the story and the message in the story remain the same. Right? You know, so that was how all of this stuff here ties in. All of this stuff here, to me, just made sense that we actually went about doing it in that particular way. And then I said Christianity before Christ and read about them. I was like, hey, man, Bobby John D. Jackson, I'm like, hey, I'm good. J. Rogers, I'm good. You know, Ivan Van Sertiman, I'm good. Percy Graves, I'm good. You know, you know, so this, you know, because I'm looking, I'm like, I remember reading about this, but this didn't make sense to me when I read it. It only made sense from one perspective. So,
No doubt. Now, I understand that you're a published author, the motivational speaker, right?
Right.
How can people go about looking at some of your speaking engagements or listening to them or go about publishing any some of your publications? How about they go about doing so in both aspects?
All right, so with the publication, so I actually published with Dr. Deborah Wilson. So I haven't, we actually have a few things that we, I put out, and actually I'm working on that now with a particular group in Augusta, Georgia, to really try to get it up and running, you know, where people can go in and have access to it, man. Usually, typically, when I just go out and speak, either they're going to record it or they're not. I'm the kept with it. You know, as we say, we didn't kept it here, we didn't kept it above 50. But Dr. Wilson and I actually presented at a conference, you know, and that was one of the requirements that she had, was that all of her students that came in through her, all of us were required to go in and present at conferences where as our work became published. So we did one on the rites of passage, actually. We did one on African-centered manhood. And that was, I think it was through the CSAP monograph. I think it was, I don't know if they even still publish those or whatnot. So those were some of the things that we published. And other than that, there's just been articles, you know, in regards to just different things or different platforms that we might write on more at a local level, you know, just through interviews and things of that nature. You know, but we're definitely building that platform now, man, to try to go in and get more structure. But as far as the speeches, it's just typically something that I typically don't record, you know, but other people, for the most part, may send it to me when they actually have me come out to do a lecture or to do a speech, man. But it's not something that I've actually really remotely thought about taking seriously. You know, it's just a platform that I have for us, by us. Trying to make sure that I get in our space where we can actually talk about it and chop it up, man, and then, you know, we just kind of go from there.
That's understood. You know, I wanted to add something what you said earlier. You talked about Dr. Zebu, right? Dr. Zebu created his own, he created his own DMS memory called nosology, right? His own DMS memory that actually relate to the new African and the African mindset in regards to how we see things and mental issues that affect us as African people, as descendants of African people, new African people, right? For the people who are listening. And also, I got one other question for you, right?
Okay.
How does Pan-Africanism relate to the mental health of African people in America?
I think that when we look at what the issues are that we have within the, you know, the African community, I think that that's the it's about finding commonality, right, in reference to strengthening the solidarity, right, between all of us, you know, from the continent, right, that have been within the diaspora. From the mental health perspective, I think that that is absolutely huge, and I think more so over and recognizing commonalities, right, and that you're not on an island, and that this collectively has been something that we all have dealt with. Now, from the professional perspective, I think it's a struggle. You and I both know that that's probably the biggest thing, is to go in and bring professionals who are licensed to go in and have them think beyond their European framework, right? You know, and not using that as a solution base for us and our problems in our community. You understand that it's on the temporary fix, and even in the temporary fix, it's specifically designed to go in and make sure that those have power stay in power. So, you know, of course, Pan-Africanism is going to go in and really talk about solidifying us all in one common theme, one common goal, you know, being able to work towards those goals collectively in order for us to be able to go in and liberate ourselves where we can govern ourselves, you know, free of oppression and domination. So mental health, technically, you know, what we tell them is that as a therapist, my goal is to get you to the point where you no longer need me. And if I get you to the point where you no longer need me, then ultimately what I should be doing is that I should be working so that I don't have a profession. That this shouldn't have to go in and exist in order for me to go in and make a living. But the things that have happened to you forces me, and what I see is that it's ongoing in regards to it. You know, but I want to get my client, I always want to get the people that I'm working with to the point, man, where they no longer need me. I need to free them and liberate them to the point where they can go in and be able to govern themselves accordingly, you know, where they don't cause injury to other people that look like them. So, you know, that's the natural process. You know, we're much harder the second go round, even when we look at it from a disciplinary standpoint. You know, if something happens to you and I'm like, you know, as much as I like to go in and I don't, you know, people with this, and just thinking about the Willie Lynch letters in that story. And what we go in and tell them, like, I don't care whether the stories are true or not. You know, what I'm looking at is the practices, right, in reference to behavior modification, in reference to how they can get you to go in and conform and how they're going to go in and get you to conform. So you understand that the mother is the first teacher of the child. So if I go in and her natural instinct is to go in to make sure that she's going to have what, self-preservation of her child. And the best way to go in and have self-preservation of a child is to go in and first eliminate the man who is the biggest threat to me so that I can have you be totally submissive to me in my advances, and that whatever it is that I make in regards to the form of the decision is what's going to go in and give your child the greatest opportunity to grow up as an adult. And if you don't do this, then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take your child from you. Yeah, you know, what we supposed to do with that? That, you know, that's what we're, you know what I'm saying? That, and we understand, cause, so Pan-Africanism is a you know, that's what you're doing, you know, that's what we're doing. You know, all of us are all fighting, man, to get from up under the thumb of oppression, domination, right? You know, and we understood that, man. I just go back to deep dead prayers again, you know, when you talked about these, you know, talked about street tribes, you know, and talking about community revolution and progress, a brotherly love overcoming oppression, domination, you know, in reference to the organization of these organs, you know, and why it was necessary in order for us to go in and have those things, you know, until the value system of this stuff began to start changing. All of it was done specifically with one goal in mind, which is to get the oppressor up out of here. It wasn't for us to go in and turn on each other, but in the process of that, you know what happened? We're going to go in and root you in evil. We're going to root you in some values, you know, that drives who you are. And because those values become at the forefront, you're going to turn on whoever it is, because now you need to have a certain status. You know, you need to have a certain, like, you know, this is strategically done. You know, when breaking down the fight, you know, look at what just happened to Baba Yasha Tyler, right? You know, in reference to them finding that he's, you know, trying to, what they're trying to do, you know, with all African people on socialist part, I think, you know, so. Just looking at this, right, they're saying that you're in cahoots with Russia, that you're receiving money from. Like, these are the types of things that we're talking about, you know, and what has, you know, Amala Yasitali done other than free the mind of people from African descent and reconnect us to that which we have been disconnected from by exposing systems that are designed to further divide us. What else have you done? And so they same thing, you know, they did it with rap, you know, they did it with, you know, they did it with Bobby Seale, they did it with Huey P. And we go through these, you know, this is any time that we have revolutionary minded men and women that come up, you know, you still have a solder, you know what I'm saying, that we ain't took out the platform. This is what they mean when they say two left for Obama. You know, that if you was here, then you go in and you free that sister, you know what I'm saying, for something that she ain't did, but you can't even come back here. You know, we got to know all of these things here, man, you know, it's stuff that we have, and that's the part of it that they hate to have the conversation about. But I'm sitting here like, I don't have time to be worried about whether or not Embiid going to be the MVP. You know, right now we got other things that we need to be talking about that are more pressing in regards to liberating us as African people. And as long as these things right here haven't been corrected and not brought to the forefront, then all that other stuff, you know what I'm saying, don't matter.
True indeed. True indeed. You know, we got less than 5 minutes left, right?
Okay.
Can you give us your final thoughts?
Anything in particular? So, let me tell you.
Your final thoughts, whatever you want to leave with. You want to leave with a quote,
whatever you had to say, you know what I'm saying, cause, I think include this show.
Okay, all right. So, first of all, man, I want to conclude by saying, man, thank you for this opportunity, brother. I'm definitely logged in. I'm logged on, man. This is some good stuff. We need more of it. Keep the fight going, brother. You know what I'm saying? We're definitely here with you, man. The community is rallying with you. We got to find a way to get you out to be able to speak as well in different circles and different social platforms and make sure, man, that we take care of you. I probably would leave, man, with two things in particular that I heard. One thing I heard is I heard a quote from Dr. Wade Nobles that has stood with me, and that's one of the things that I've built or that I use in my practice. And I oftentimes use in my motivational speaking, that power is the ability to define reality and have other people respond to that definition of reality as if it's their own. And this is what we're, you know, and that's what I think we're actually dealing with, you know. It's the definition of what power looks like, you know, in regards to your reality. So, you know, that's what I would leave the people with and remind them, man, that, you know, we have to be we have to define our reality. We have to remind people that our people, man, that our brothers and sisters, that, you know, the Creator reached this infinite possibilities when he made you. Out of a million opportunities to come forth in life, you are the one that are here. You know, so remember that you have purpose. Out of 1 million opportunities, man, through fighting through and what we had to go through in order for you to go in and be born, you know, what is it that you're going to go in and give the world, and especially those of us of the African ancestry, right, and that are descendants of Africans, that, you know, a fight that tells us that we got to keep on going. Well, think about that, man, in reference to when you mentioned earlier the man, woman, and child, and breaking down their ump, and breaking down the bottom, breaking down the top, and breaking down the side, man, in reference to the fallopian tubes, and, you know, what you had to, you know, what the sperm had to go through in order for it just to reach the egg. And only one, if you ain't got a twin, made it. Out of a million possibilities. Man, how powerful are you? Appreciate it, brother.
True indeed, brother. I appreciate you, brother. You know, I like, if anyone get any little one comrade associate behind enemy line, be looking at Georgia University Radio, be looking at Georgia University. We will find on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and I enjoy that university. You go on our website, which is www.georgiauniversity-gau.com. Again, it's www.georgiauniversity-gau.com. You also can contact us via email at georgiauniversity71@gmail.com. Along with the new African independent movement, along with the guerrilla, and free all our country new African citizens, and free all our new African political prisoners and POWs. Free the land.